Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in live to Tribe, a family channel, Voices of Wisdom. This is our final season 10, episode 4, hosted by civil rights activist of the historical Tougaloo Nine, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, and Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. I am the creator of Tribe Family Channel, Beverly Black, and I am here instead for Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, who is traveling on speaking engagements and continuing to carry the torch of her part of the Tougaloo Nine. But we are joined by the leader of the Tougaloo Nine, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., who was trained by the late, great Medgar Evers. This evening, it gives me an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to bring two voices together, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. and criminal justice professor, Dr. Maxine L. Bryant. Dr. Maxine L. Bryant is not only the former host of the sister station here on Tribe Family Channel, the Dr. Maxine L. Bryant Show, most famously known for getting her groove back, and she will clarify all of that when we bring her on. But let me just tell you just a little bit about her before I bring on Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. In 2010, Dr. Maxine Elbrine accepted the position of Director of the Mayor's Office of Reentry, City of Indianapolis, and expanded the span and effectiveness of that office exponentially. In December 2011, Maxine relocated to Savannah, Georgia, and was contracted to serve as the first director of the Chatham County Sheriff's Office Work Release Program. During its inaugural year of existence and under Promised Land LLC. Currently, she is a professor of criminal justice and interim associate provost of diversity at Georgia Southern University, Savannah, Georgia campus. There, she assisted in the founding of Georgia's first official student African American sisterhood chapter. Now, as a reminder to you all, before I bring on my co-host, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., I just want you to know that Voices of Wisdom is so named to keep the voice of Rachel Berry alive through our platform. She created the group Voices of Wisdom because everyone knows something that someone else needs to know, officially known as the Vow Network on Facebook. Rachel Berry went home to be with the Lord January 9th, 2013, and we will keep her voice and her memory alive through our platform. So now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the leader of the Tougaloo Nine, the courageous king, an iconic Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, Miss Beverly Black. But I'm going to have to really follow in the
footsteps. Don't you push back on me.
well, you know it's coming. I've got to follow in the footsteps of my a mentor and my role model, and his name is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And anytime and every time he would really be presented with such an outstanding, par excellent introduction, he would say, and that's what I'm going to say, Are you talking about me?
you a mess. you know you are something else. Now, Mr. Yeah. Joseph Jackson Jr., I know it's hard for you to understand, and at your young, thriving, ripe young age of 82. I know that's more like 28 for you, but you must understand that you are an icon of the civil rights movement, and I think that that is something that you are just coming to terms with.
Right.
And given, because you know you and I, we talk a lot, but I just take great pleasure and honor with acknowledging that not only was the integration of the libraries pivotal in our history, but it's also pivotal in my own walk. As we've discussed, I went through the libraries, matriculating my publishing career, and had it not been for the libraries, I guess I would have had to, you know, sit out in my car somewhere and do what I did.
Right. Right. Well, actually, I'm very proud to have been a part of such exciting, frightening, terrifying, courageous undertaking. I'm glad that I was a part of that. But that was the brainchild of my mentor as well as my leader, who was the first African-American field secretary there father state of Mississippi. That was Mr. Medgar Wiley Evers. And so, you know, with all of the news media reporting, of course, naturally, the, you know, the sit-in movements and the lunch counters and the freedom riders, you know, no one really thought about sitting in, staging a sit-in in a library. And so that was Mr. Evers' brainchild. That was his plan. And Indeed.
Well now this particular broadcast is focusing tonight's topic on criminalized by color. Now, as I've said, our guest speaker is a professor of criminal justice in Savannah, Georgia. Now, you have appeared, and she has as well, on our brother station, Criminalized by Color. And I wanted to bring the two of you together to hone in on that topic as it relates to the two different sides of the spectrum in which the two of you operate from. Now, in 1961, Dr. Maxine Bryan and myself, we had barely arrived, you know, in our young stage and age. And so we're going to let your wisdom precede the conversation. And I know she's probably over there laughing, so I'm bringing her on now. Dr. Maxine L. Bryan, welcome to Tribe Family Channels, Voices of Wisdom. Say hello to Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. Welcome, Dr. Maxine L. Bryan.
Thank you. Thank you, Beverly. And I really sit here just honored to be in the virtual presence of Mr. Joseph Jackson. You really are an icon in the civil rights movement. And to think that you willingly experience incarceration to help generations beyond you without even knowing that you yourself would even live to see a day when integration would take place in institutions of higher education, in our libraries, and all of that. So I am honored to have this conversation with you. And I applaud the genius thinking of Beverly Black to even think about taking history and putting it with, marrying it with contemporary circumstances as she brings our two perspectives together. I am honored.
Dr. Bryan. Thank you very much. As I've often told Miss Beverly Black, at that time, I reflect back on that part of history. I believe had I really thought about had I just paused and thought about the consequences of what the outcome would have been, especially in a state like Mississippi, with this history of lynchings and brutality against our people, I don't believe I would have accepted the presidency of that organization, the NAACP Student Council. But I went to Tougaloo Southern Christian College there. I arrived there on the Tougaloo Southern Christian College campus in the fall of 1961. And so actually, I was an ordained minister. I was ordained into the ministry by the Christian Church, better known as the Disciple of Christ. And my role model was Dr. King, and also the president, former president, of Morehouse College, Dr. Benjamin E. Mays. And those two ministers were my role model, and I wanted to really follow in their footsteps with regards to civil rights. And so when I hit the campus there in the fall of 1960, I did not have any idea of what the universe, which is my God, had plans for me. But that's why I immediately, after I was elected president, I had the zeal and the courage to do what I did, because I always thought about Dr. Mays and Dr. King.
Wow. Well, we are definitely indebted to your courage and even your ignorance and not knowing what was going to lie ahead. But I'm glad that you took that risk, even though you didn't know what the consequences would be. We are internally indebted to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. But see, what's funny is I only remained there at TBLU for a year and a half, because at that time I was 23 years of age. I also was married, and I had two children. And so just the thought of me being incarcerated in the state of Mississippi and Mr. Evers assured us that Monday, which it was a Monday morning when we were arrested after having staged the sit-in in the library, he assured us that we would be released that same evening, and bond money from the NAACP legal fund would be posted. Well, Dr. Bryant, the later it got, and there are no windows, and, I was in the cell by myself, and the later it got, Dr. Bryant, that's when I knew something had gone awry, you know, because my expectation was to do what we had planned to do. We did it, and I'm ready to get released, especially as quick as possible, Dr. Bryant, being in a state of Mississippi, and so the later it got. That was when I began to really focus on the inevitability of my death. Everything that I had read about Mississippi, my grandparents lived in Belzoni, Mississippi, and Reverend Lee was the NAACP president of the NAACP chapter there in Belzoni, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And he was shot and killed because of his working to generate voter registration, and he was shot and killed. So all of these thoughts came to me, and I have never ever felt the depth of just feeling helpless in my life. I mean, really, and just contemplating that my life was going to end there in Jackson, Mississippi.
How long did you spend in jail?
Dr. Bryant, we spent in jail 32 hours.
Okay. Which is about 30 hours more than you wanted to, at least.
Exactly, because I wanted to be released as soon as possible. And so there was a joke, you know, that I told to my colleagues. I said, "Man, I have a wife and I'm a family man, and Dr. Brian, here I am. I couldn't sleep. You know, I couldn't eat, and I'm just waiting to hear the jail cell door being open and visualizing there are several Ku Klux Klan members." And I told my colleague, I said, "Well, that's okay. You know, I'm a little actor in my own right." You know, I said, "Okay, just let the Klan come on in there, because I got something for them." And I said, "Mr. Klan," you know, as I fell on bended knees, you know how we do, you know. We're good at pleading for our lives. So
I know.
I said, "Please, Mr. Klansman, don't hang me." I said, "I have a wife and two little children waiting for me in Memphis. And if you release me tonight, I guarantee you that I will never, ever return back to the state of Mississippi and violate your Jim Crow laws."
Wow.
And my colleague in the opposite cell, he said, Joe. And you know what the Klansman would have said? And I said, "What?" He said, the Klansman would have said, "Nigga, you should have thought about that before you violated our laws. Come on, get him. Take him on out."
Mr. Jackson, as I listen to you, I'm intrigued by the similarities of what you went through and what many African-American men go through in contemporary times. You were jailed unjustly, and you were,
right.
Now, in your case, you were standing up for something that was right, but the Innocence Project, for example, has found so very many hundreds, if not thousands, of African-American men, who have been imprisoned unjustly because of biases and unjust laws and prejudice and racism that contributed to that, just like it contributed to your going to jail. We still have those things that we're battling now with African-American men being unjustly incarcerated. So as much as things have changed, they yet remain the same.
Yes, uh-huh. And I wanted to ask you whether or not the writings of Michelle Alexander, who I just recently purchased her book titled "The New Jim Crow: Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindedness," and she related that mass incarceration really as a form of a caste system, and
absolutely.
during the Reconstruction period, when we were freed as black people, then the Jim Crow laws were implemented. And she just said that there will always be some kind of a form of social control, really, for us as black people, as the previous system of social control ends, like slavery, then Jim Crow, and here now mass incarceration. What are your thoughts about where we are now with regards to criminal reform? Because I don't know how quickly we have really moved towards trying to develop some kind of a plan to reduce mass incarceration, mass incarceration, or is this the system which has really decided to continue to make this a form of social control for us as black and brown people?
You are absolutely right. I use Michelle Alexander's book in my classes, in almost every class, because I want to expose my students to that kind of thinking, because I think it is correct and good thinking. Certainly, there are many who say the criminal justice system is broken. There are just as many who correctly say it is not broken. It is doing exactly what it intended to do. When we look at social control of black and brown people, it does date all the way back to slavery, as you just said. And there is indeed a caste system, whether it is by finance, whether it is by colorism, whether it is by mass incarceration. And you said it just right. We went from slavery to Jim Crow, and now the new Jim Crow, or a new form of slavery, is mass incarceration. That's because there are laws and practices, policies that were put in place deliberately to keep African American and Latina people down through social control, through ways of debilitating their votes, keeping them out of society through incarceration, incapacitation, mandatory minimums. A lot of African Americans voted for Clinton. I did. I was one of them. But the fact of the matter is, he is the person who instituted mandatory minimums in our society that disproportionately harmed black and brown people. I have a chart, for example, that I use when I'm teaching on this topic. And Mr. Jackson, did you know that in 1999, there was about 70% of those people who were incarcerated in our jails and our prisons were white? 70% were white in 1999. 2010, 80% were black. What happened? Did black people start committing more crimes? No, but rather laws and policies were instituted that resulted in the incarceration of more black bodies, whether that was the crack cocaine disparity, whether it was other policies that were designed to hold black people down, and social economic. Michelle Alexander talks about that a great deal. So we have a lot of contributing factors as to why we are incarcerated even more so now. Well, I shouldn't say that. Why we became more involved in the criminal justice system. Now there are things that are supposedly being put in place to reduce that, but we still are very much unbalanced in incarceration rates.
Well, actually, I was just surprised because you know, the average layman, we who are productive people who are in the mainstream, you know, we got jobs, we're educated, and we don't really think about the plight of those that are incarcerated. It's like
right. They're
out of sight, out of mind. And after reading Michelle Alexander's book, when she said that even though they will have completed their sentencing and they have been held behind bars through the term of their sentencing, you know, regardless how long the sentencing was, even though they were no longer behind bars and they are released, she said that virtually they are still behind bars in terms of they said they're, people think that they're free, But she said they're not free because of the label of being a felon. And if you are a felon, she said, you can't vote. You are racially discriminated against public housing. You're disqualified from receiving public benefits like food stamps. Not to mention, you were discriminated because of that label of being a felon. You're denied employment. And so she just said, really, she's, you know, and I analyzed it, and I said, wow, well, there's a stigma there. Just the idea that you're called a felon, but yet you serve your time. So, that was a reality check for me, because I wasn't aware of that. I just thought that you do your time, or you're on probation, or you're on parole, and you return back, you know, into the mainstream of life. But that's not the case.
That is absolutely not the case. You mentioned earlier Reconstruction, and that was the period of time, right, post-slavery, when blacks had many freedoms, but they were still dealing with a nation that was not yet ready to consider them equal. And so we had sharecropping, where they never got out of debt. We had other chain gangs that were instituted during that time. Blacks were arrested in the South for vagrancy, for loitering, for anything that would keep them indebted to the system, if you will. Then, you know,
yeah,
Jim Crow.
The black codes. That's what surprised me. The black codes.
Absolutely. The same things that were going on then happen to felons when they are released now. They can't vote. We couldn't vote then. They can't get a job. We couldn't get jobs then. They can't have a place to live. As a matter of fact, in Savannah and other cities across the country, there was Savannah has disbanded this, where I live now, but there's still a movement across the country called crime-free housing, where landlords, private and apartment complexes, are encouraged not to let felons live there, even if they have good-paying jobs and can afford the rent. There are incentives in place to keep landlords from allowing people to vote. I mean, I'm sorry, allowing felons to live there. I do want to visit the whole voting thing. Mr. Jackson, one of the things I found out, and I wrote an article about this a couple of years ago, but there are two states in our country that allow prisoners to vote while they are incarcerated.
Maine and Vermont. I have you pin that? Maine and Vermont. You, ladies and gentlemen, you heard that. Dr. Maxine Bryant, can you pin that for our commercial break and come right back to discuss the voting rights of incarcerated people in Maine and Vermont, and even more so if you want to expound right after this commercial break, all right?
Cool. Thanks.
Need a speaker for your next event, conference, or church service? Dr. Maxine Bryan may be available to come to speak from her wealth of experience and knowledge on multiple topics. A licensed minister, Dr. Maxine Bryan draws upon God-given communication talents and gifts and combines proven instructional design techniques and award-winning presentation style to inspire and instruct, educate and enlighten, plan, promote, and problem solve, and embrace participants in an exhilarating experience. Call Pat Moss at 612-876-7964 to find out how and how much more you can get when you arrange for Dr. Bryan to come speak at your next event.
Thank you. Welcome back live on Tribe Family Channel, Voices of Wisdom. And this Rife conversation you are listening to is between Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., the leader of the civil rights activist, the historical Tougaloo Nine, with Dr. Maxine L. Bryant, criminal justice professor, formerly hosting the Dr. Maxine L. Bryant Show right here on Tribe Family Channel, as well as Incarcerated Lives Matter. Now we return you to their conversation.
Thank you, Beverly. Just real quick,
thank you,
Mr. Jackson. I mentioned that Maine and Vermont are the only two states in our country that allow felons to vote while they are incarcerated. Now think about this. How many black people live in Maine and Vermont?
Dr. Bryant, I would say that that definitely sounds like a $64,000 question.
Let me say a very small percentage, right? So that means the majority of the people who are incarcerated there are white and can vote. Why then is there such an upheaval about people who are generally African Americans being able to vote post-incarceration? What's up with that? That's another attempt at the social control that Michelle Alexander speaks about in her book.
Oh, my God. Well, let me ask you a $64,000 question. I do believe, if my memory serves me correctly, Senator Cory Booker was instrumental in getting a criminal justice reform, I would say, legislation passed in Florida. Am I right? And that the young men who were released from prison, they now have the right to vote. Am I right, or am I wrong, what is happening with that?
You're partially right. Cory Booker has definitely been a friend of prison reform. He has done significant things. They were primarily in the state of New Jersey. Now, you're right in that Florida did have a governor that passed a law, signed off on a law to allow felons to vote post-incarceration. However, quietly, that law has been retracted to its former shape, and felons in Florida no longer enjoy the right to vote post-incarceration.
What?
It was rescinded.
Oh, my God. Oh. No wonder I haven't heard anything since that legislation had passed, but they rescinded it.
Huh? Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh
yes.
My God. Oh.
That happened earlier this year, late last year. They got their rights to vote. I think it was in 2000, either 17 or 18. And then they lost it. A federal judge, blocked part of it. He issued a ruling that, I don't know if it was the judge, but the governor, through legislation, rescinded part of that that vote that would, part of the policy rather, the law that would allow all felons to vote. They rescinded part of that. I'm looking it up now. And it was very quiet. There was not a lot of hoopla.
Right.
That.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, and what they said, it said that before they could vote, they had to pay all of their court fines and fees. Well, that impacted a significant number of them. So whereas before it was a blanket right to vote, they took that blanket right away and said, wait a minute, before you can vote, you're going to have to pay off everything. Well, how am I going to do that if I'm not working? And here's the question I've always asked.
Exactly.
Yes.
I said exactly.
My citizenship right to vote has to do with my having been incarcerated. Nothing.
And let me just come in and say you two are on par for exactly what this subject or this show is about, the topic being criminalized by color. So now I would like to pose a question to both of you, and that would be to define what it means to be criminalized by color. From your two perspectives, being on the opposite ends of, like Dr. Maxine Bryant so eloquently put it, when you're looking at the historical position of you, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., and the contemporary status that she holds. And so I really love the dialogue that's coming forth, and I'd like to know your take on defining criminalized by color. And going deeper into unpacking the evidence of that criminalization in the landscape of your respective time periods when, you know, you matriculated your backgrounds. You first, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., define what it means to be criminalized by color.
Out of respect for Dr. Maxine L. Bryant, even though I live in California, I grew up with these strong Southern roots, and I am a gentleman. So I would like for Dr. Bryant to go ahead of me.
Well, amen, amen, amen. And, you know, that's just like a real gentleman, because at first that was going to be my choice. And so now I know to follow my first mind, like Big Mama always said. Queen Dr. Maxine L. Bryant, please do us the honor. What does it mean? And please define what it means to be criminalized by color, and really unpack that for us in the landscape of which, you know, your background has matriculated.
When we talk about being criminalized by color in contemporary terms, we are specifically talking about the unacceptable high numbers of Black and brown people who are introduced into the criminal justice system by, first of all, law enforcement, who have discretion about who they arrest and who they question, and even who they kill, because nowadays it's not just being incarcerated. We have to be afraid of dying, right, at the hands of law enforcement. Then going to the court, and prosecution has the opportunity then to make a decision on whether or not to prosecute. Get this, criminalized by color. A good prosecutor, first of all, prosecutors are elected, right? It's interesting when you think about the fact that prosecutors stay at their jobs by the number of votes that they get with each election.
Wow. Okay?
And so we talk about a grand jury, for example. Grand juries only hear information from the prosecutor. They don't hear information from the defense. So if a prosecutor doesn't want an indictment, guess what? They won't get one, which is one of the reasons very few policemen or women get indicted when they shoot and kill innocent people without weapons. Okay? Most of those people who are indicted, when it's like a police shooting or any other high-level crime, they do so because the prosecutor presents the kind of information that will lead to an indictment. If the prosecutor doesn't want an indictment, they then can very skillfully and very strategically present information that will result in a return of a no indictment. What we do know about colorization as it relates to criminalization by color is that African Americans are incarcerated at 5 times the rate of white people. Colorism, okay, or criminalization by color. Our children, they represent 32% of children who are arrested, 42% of children who are detained, and 52% of children whose cases are waived to criminal court. You all may know about Quantrell Jackson, young 16-year-old guy, I want to say Alabama, Montgomery. African-American child was, and I got another example, too, that just came to my mind. But Quantrell was with two other juveniles. They went into a store to rob it. Quantrell stayed outside. The two inside shot and killed the clerk. Quantrell, by association, we see was indicted, was charged, arrested, indicted, convicted, and served 10 years of his life. His case was waived to adult court, so he was put into an adult prison. And I think he was given life in prison. And through a number of things that went on in his favor, fights for justice, for example, he was released recently, like about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. That's just one story. I know you all know, and if you ever have the opportunity to watch the show, the Netflix show by Ava DuVernay, the 13th documentary.
I have that.
Out about Khalif, Khalif Browder. Do you remember reading about that?
I have that documentary.
Okay, you must. Khalif is a young man. I'm sorry?
I said I have that documentary. It's titled 13th, right?
Right. Khalif mm-hmm. was a young yep. African-American boy who was arrested for stealing a backpack that he did not steal. He was lost in the system, served at least 3 years in Rikers, right, was beaten, raped, mistreated by guards and other young men who were in there, came out, and I think he lived 2 years maybe before he killed himself. We have statistic after statistic of African-American and Hispanic youth who are caught up in the criminal justice system. Talk about criminalization by color. Look at the crack cocaine disparity, for example. Remember, not too very long ago, you got 5 years of federal time if you just had 5 grams of crack. It took mm-hmm. 500 grams of powder cocaine to get the same amount of time. Criminalization by color, mm-hmm. okay? I could go on and on. Beverly knows this is one of my favorite topics, so I'm not going to stop and let you take it.
Indeed.
There are example after example after example of our disparities in our system as a result of laws that were designed to criminalize black people. And if you take some time and look at the 13th, you will find that the system, the power structure, the powers that be intentionally and knowingly put those laws into place to hold down African Americans, just like they did when you were in your prime, Mr. Jackson.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm. Mm.
Yes.
Very, very profound, very profound. Now we're winding up to the last 10 minutes of the show. Dr. Maxine Bryant, let everyone know where they can reach you and your website and your information if they want to reach you. And then Mr. Joseph Jackson is going to conclude with his comments on what it means to be criminalized by color.
Thank you, Beverly. I appreciate that. Well, I have a new venture. It's called The Virtual Professor. And if you want more information like what you've heard this evening, you can go to my website, drmaxinebryant.com, and you can look at videos that I've made talking about the criminal justice system and disparities. Right now, there are 4 videos that you can look at totally free of charge. You want to catch it while it's free. It won't be free long. The number that you can reach if you wish to have a conversation with me is 912-574-3035. Now, also, real quick, Beverly, at the beginning of the show, mentioned how I got my groove back. She mentioned those words. I also have a book that I authored, and it's called I Want My Groove Back God's Way. And you can get that book and find out more about me through another website that's simply MaxineBryant.com. You can get a copy, you can purchase a copy of my book there. I'm also a poet, so you can look for my poetry book, as well as I Want My Groove Back God's Way, and I have another poetry book that's on the horizon called Heartbeats. So thank you. That's
wow.
Wow.
That is amazing. Congratulations. Now, what is your agent's name in case anyone wants to book you directly through your agent, please, and give out your agent's information? Yes.
Thank you very much. She would, like, never forgive me if I didn't do this right. My agent is Pat Malks. As a matter of fact, I share the agent with Sheila Ray Charles. Sheila Ray Charles, my deceased sister and friend and comrade, had the same agent, Pat Malks. Her number is 612-876-7964. Any inquiries in terms of speaking engagements, please direct them to Pat Malt, 612-876-7964. Thanks, Beverly.
You're welcome. And she is talking about the late, great Sheila Ray Charles, daughter of the late, great genius Ray Charles.
Yes.
And Pat Maltz
yes.
is her phenomenal agent. So be sure to follow up on that information and book Dr. Maxine L. Bryant. You will not be disappointed. And so again, additionally, I'd like to just thank you so much for taking the time and making yourself available for our show, Dr. Maxine L. Bryant, and I'm definitely wanting to get you on some of the other shows to further discuss your books and the new release. So congratulations on that, and I'm going to turn it back over to our host and the iconic civil rights activist and the leader of the Tougaloo Nine, trained by the late, great Medgar Evers, his mentor and friend, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. Please define criminalized by color.
Before I give my experiences regarding that label, I will be brief, but the time remaining, I would like to say to Dr. Bryant, congratulations on your books and your achievement, and I am very, very, very honored and grateful to have this opportunity to talk with someone of your professional status regarding the plight of our people, especially our men, who largely represents the larger population in the prison system. But I'm just so thankful that that God has blessed me to be able, in terms of with Miss Beverly Black, to meet such important people. This means so much to me.
Actually, the honor is all mine. Thank you.
Now, what is my take on the label criminalized by color? I will say this, and it is still a racial, subtle, biased attitude by those that are in law enforcement. I do not care how many times you may mention to the public that the idea of racial profiling. Are you listening? You can say whatever. You can legislate whatever. But those that still believe in racial profiling, those who are in law enforcement, they are still executing that kind of racial attitude and biasness.
Mm.
And
wow.
That's all I have to say. It is continuing. And I know that it is continuing, and I'm going to finish on this information.
Wow.
You recall the black man, it was in his living room in Texas, and just by officer thinking that he was the whatever shot him in his living room in Texas. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And she got ten years. All right, that's okay, fine. But within 2 weeks of that incident in Texas, another officer peeping through the window of a residence, whereas this young lady, who was, I believe, 28, playing a video game with her nephew, he looked in the window, did not really announce that he was an officer or whatever, and just arbitrarily shot through the window and killed the lady. And so that's what I mean.
A young lady sitting there playing videos with her son. And her father subsequently just died of a heart attack from being heartbroken over the loss of his daughter. So when you talk about being criminalized by color, and I'm sorry to jump in there on you, Mr. Jackson, but it really does hurt and it does hit home, because the criminalization has a domino effect, and it is intentional. It is a model that is systemically maintained, and it is well thought out. It is it has future ramifications for our people, because there is future plans to keep the criminalization process in place. And you know, we could go on and on and on. Maybe we'll need to do a part two between the two of you, but for now I just want to say thank you to both of you for being on this show at this time and this place. Tribe Family Channel, Voices of Wisdom, again, is a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand created, owned, and operated by yours truly, Beverly. And you can catch the archives at blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. Our parent company is GumboForTheSoulInternational.com. Now, any final words for our listeners, Dr. Maxine Bryant, before we turn over the mic back to Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. to close us out with final thoughts for our listeners?
First of all, thank you. I just want to say, Dr. Jackson, Mr. Jackson, and other civil rights leaders were jailed because they were black. They were criminalized by their color, even though they were standing up for something very right. That still continues today, even though it's for a different reason. Our young people are being criminalized by color in the 21st century, in 2019, 2020, different reasons, same thing going on. It was going on in the 60s. It's still going on now. We are still being criminalized by color.
Wow.
And we haven't even talked about the brown folk that are being caged on the border. No one's forgotten about that in the landscape of this insidious administration. Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., the civil rights activist of the historic Tougaloo Nine, leader and mentee of Mr. Medgar Evers. Final thoughts.
Well, I just recently saw the documentary titled Apollo. And the documentary really was about the Apollo Theater in Harlem, where many dreams were born and legends were made. And when I played the soundtrack of that movie, the writer and the singer, his name is Robert Goldman, and Letticy is the singer. And I've got to leave this with you because the title of the soundtrack is Don't Turn Back Now. And to all of the young people who have dreams, and all of the adults out there who still have aspirations, don't turn back now. We have come too far not to make it. Don't turn back now. It might be hard, but you can take it. Don't turn back now. And that's it.
Amen. Well, now, I want to thank both of you for being on our show. Dr. Maxine Bryant, I send out special prayers and good tidings to you as you honor Myosha on the 8th anniversary of your daughter's going home almost to the date this month. And I just want you to know that your crown is golden. And the only thing that I can do with it is shine it and sit it down. Queen, thank you so much for availing your time. Dr. Maxine L. Bryant, ladies and gentlemen, criminal justice professor, and she is an extraordinary speaker, life coach, mentor, and poet. Be sure to visit her and book her for your next event. Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., iconic leader of the historic Tougaloo Nine, thank you so much again for availing your wisdom for Voices of Wisdom. Have a very thankful Thanksgiving and be blessed.
Thank you. And the same to you, Miss Beverly, Queen Beverly. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Miss Beverly.
Thank you, and God bless you. We want to thank everyone for taking the time out for listening and enjoying this discussion on Voices of Wisdom via Tribe Family Channel. Good night, and God bless.
Good night. Ever since
beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Hey, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Tri-Family Channel. Voices of wisdom.